The next matter this afternoon is Temple v. Herzog. Excuse me, it's Ritz v. TEO. Apologize for that.
We understood very well.
Oops. Wrong column. Very well. Mr. Temple, are you ready? At your convenience.
May it please the court, Mr. Herzog. Good afternoon, members of the court. My name is Ron Temple. I'm an attorney in Norfolk, Nebraska. I represent TEO, Inc., a corporation, and the appellant herein. Your Honors, at the risk of overstating the significance of this case, the affirmation or reversal of the district court's order in Holt County will have a monumental effect on all of Nebraska, and especially rural Nebraska, inasmuch as every farmer or rancher faces the prospect of losing some amount of real estate for which he or she has a deed, simply because of the fact that a perimeter fence would have been installed some 55, 60, 65 years before that, for some unknown, perhaps slightly known reason, wherein the perimeter fence is inside of what would be known as the actual boundary line. And during that time period, the neighbor has hayed that ground one time per year during the duration. We respectfully suggest that such a result is inconsistent with existing law and would have a tremendous effect upon every real estate transaction in the future, because one will never be able to rely upon the registered deeds records, because under the district court's order, the perimeter fence is now the boundary line. The standard review available to this court allows this court to right that type of wrong and reverse the decision of the trial court, which essentially has rewrote the records of the Register of Deeds office, because the boundary line between neighbors are no longer the legally defined boundaries, but instead there are fences.
Counsel,
which now become.
Isn't that what happens in every adverse possession case when the court finds that the property has been adversely held and transfers the ownership from the owner who in the record to the new person?
Your Honor, yes and no. Yes, in the sense that there's a transfer of land, but no in the sense that these facts are such that no one knows when the fence was installed. No one knows why the fence was installed. There was no testimony from the predecessors in title regarding that fence being a boundary line or not being a boundary line. And in fact, what's peculiar about this case is the trial court found that the adverse possession occurred in either 1970 or 1995, some 45 or 25 years prior to my client ever acquiring the land. And so therefore, if you subscribe to the district court's holding, this real estate conveyance by adverse possession occurred 45 years prior to my client owning the land. And so therefore, there has been a rewriting of the register of deeds 45 years prior thereto.
I have to ask you, from a trial strategy standpoint, when, and I believe this is reflected in the record, the stipulation was we agree to the actual continuous, exclusive, and notorious possession. The only thing we are here arguing about is the claim of ownership for 10 consecutive years. So aren't you a little bit handcuffed there?
Not necessarily, no, Your Honor, because the facts of the case lend themselves to all of those elements of the adverse possession other than the claim of ownership component, which is lacking in this case, which is exactly the problem, because the appellees, the Ritz, never treated this land as theirs, the disputed strip. Never did anything with the tax records, never went to the assessor, never, when the land was conveyed twice before, never said, hey, by the way, you're selling my land. They went to their own attorney for estate planning and never included this land. So the claim of ownership component is what is lacking. There has been use by the Ritz, actually, continuously, and so forth, over the course of those years, some 70 years perhaps.
And did they treat it as their own?
Well, if to the extent that paying the 27 foot by 11 foot by half mile strip once per year constitutes treating as your own, then I suppose the court's the answer to that question is yes. But
wasn't there also testimony that when people would want to come on to hunt on the property, they would tell the individuals that they could hunt up to the fence?
I would respectfully suggest that there was some testimony regarding that, the testimony being less than clear regarding that actually occurring. And I would suggest that the testimony of the person from whom that came from, the witnesses, the Ritzes, their memory is considerably suspect as it relates to that. And the record is clear in relation to that. And I would suggest that that's not necessarily accurate.
Was there any testimony that your client or the predecessors of your client used this land or made any?
No, because in fact what you have is exactly that. You have a fence line that has existed some 70 years. So what you do, Your Honor, is you transpose that to today. We have hundreds, thousands of miles of fence out in western Nebraska. And those fences have been there for 50, 70 years. Does that mean that the owner for which the fence is on the inside of the actual boundary line has lost the land on the other side because he or she's never used it? That's the practical holding of this court, the trial court, because against settled law that says that the placing of a fence inside of the true boundary lines does not indicate a relinquishment on the part of the landowner. And we know that fences, by virtue of the record, a realtor said 50 to 60% of all real estate transactions, the fences are not on the boundary lines. So what's happening here is it may be 2 feet in one case, it may be 15 feet in another case. That may go on for a mile, 2, 3, 4 miles, huge ranches.
So if this case remains the way it is now, is that telling people, buyer beware, that you need to get this surveyed before you buy it?
Absolutely, and in addition to surveying it, what will have to occur is the purchaser will have to go to every neighbor and obtain a quitclaim deed indicating that the fences are not the boundary lines and we're using the actual boundary lines. And in some cases, that may be 5, 10, 15 neighbors.
It also should reduce the cost of the land if they are unable to get it.
I wouldn't necessarily agree with that because of the fact that some of these transactions may be relatively small, some of them may be relatively big, and we may be talking about a lot of land. We may not be talking about much land at all, Your Honor.
But at least you'd know what you're buying before you buy.
Well, you'll never, unless you go get quitclaim deeds from the neighbors, you'll never know.
You have it surveyed and you have it laid out, that's your property, and there's a fence that's on your property diminishing the land. You'll know before you buy it.
You will certainly know before you buy it. Yes, Your Honor, I apologize for misunderstanding your question, but you certainly will know, which necessitates that exact problem, going to the neighbor and say, hey, by the way, do you realize that the fence is 3 or 4 feet inside of the actual boundary line?
But that's going to be up to the seller to resolve, isn't it?
It's going to be up to the seller and the buyer to resolve all those issues, and it's going to impose essentially a requirement that all existing landowners go evaluate their land to determine whether the fence is in fact on the boundary line. And this problem comes as a result of the fact that this record is different from all the records that I can find in other cases, because there's absolutely no testimony of what occurred prior to 1965, 70-ish in that area, when the witnesses who did testify observed regarding the land itself. We would ask the court to reverse the decision of the trial court, remand with directions to sustain the counterclaim and quiet title in the ownership of the TDO.
Mr. Temple, as I understand it, the only element that you claim is missing is the claim of ownership. Is that correct?
We stand strong on that issue.
Okay.
That's correct.
How does one make a claim of ownership?
One makes a claim of ownership by virtue of settled case law in Nebraska by their acts. And we've delineated the acts that are consistent or lack of, or not consistent with ownership. For example, going to your lawyer for estate planning and drawing up paperwork that says, hey, I'm giving this ground. Didn't happen. When the land sells, saying, hey, you're selling my land. Beyond that, there are no acts of ownership, Your Honor, and that's exactly the problem here. It's evidence by acts, not by their comments, Your Honor, their testimony of trial.
Thank you very much. How much time are we taking over? Please add that to the appellee's time. Counsel, whenever you're ready.
Thank you. May it please the court, ladies and gentlemen. My name's Tom Herzog. I'm an attorney with an office in O'Neill, Nebraska. I want to inform the court that I had a number of prepared remarks, but in view of Mr. Temple's remarks, I want to say right off the bat that Mr. Temple initially stated that the disposition of this matter may have monumental effects on rural Nebraska. But as District Judge Mark Kozacek told Mr. Temple when Mr. Temple made that remark, the district judge said, the concept of adverse possession is a well-established and accepted legal premise in this state. And I believe that that's something that this court should bear firmly in mind. The counsel for appellant then made another statement that I don't want to gloss over. He claims that the Ritz never treated the disputed strip as their own. Now, here's the problem with that statement. We're talking about a section of real estate, flat as a pancake, with every acre in that section irrigated except the Ritz 80, which the Ritz are constantly beleaguered with people trying to buy that 80. More irrigation, more irrigation, more irrigation. The Ritzes don't believe in irrigation. The Ritzes have owned this 80-acre unbroken meadow. This property has never been plowed, never been disced, never been harrowed, nothing. It's unbroken prairie hay, which is highly sought after as the best prairie hay for calves in our part of the state. It's a big deal. This isn't some kind of an old arbitrary haying once in a while, or some type of once in a while we might hay it, once in a while we may not. If you know anything about rural Nebraska, and especially north and west Nebraska, where we still have unbroken land used for prairie hay production, you will know that nobody hays prairie hay more than once a year. You have to give it a chance to rebound. You hay it once a year. You don't get three and four cuttings like you do off of an alfalfa. It's a one-time thing. It's annual. And the Ritzes testified that they have mowed up to that fence, raked, and in the old days stacked, today baled, raked and baled right up to that fence for at least 55 years.
Now, Mr. Herzog, can you tell me what evidence is there of a claim of ownership.
Okay. That's what I'm getting at in my roundabout way.
Yeah. I'll take you right there.
And I put that right back in your lap, Your Honor. What evidence is there that Ritz's owned the rest of the 80? You see, now they've got 81 acres. They thought they had 80 because there are 80 acres in close. There's a wire fence on the north of the 80. Been there since 1960 at least. There's an identical wire fence on the east side of the 80. Been there at least since 1960, just like the other one. On the other two sides of the 80, there's an asphalt road on the south and on the west. So it's enclosed on two sides by an asphalt road and on two sides by barbed wire fence. Now, the Ritz's they didn't know they were enclosing more than 80 acres. They called it an 80, they thought they had 80. Nothing wrong with that. This state's Supreme Court is replete with decisions that says the fact that one claims land or occupies or possesses land beyond the call of one's deed does not diminish one's adverse possession rights. Just because you didn't know you were using more than you had your deed does not somehow minimize your claim. So in answer to your question, I have a direct answer to your question. The answer is, they hate it. That's what they did up with the entire 80. That's how they claim. They make a claim of ownership. They use it. You drive by that 80, you see Mrs. Hay Meadow. Well, they have it. There are either bales or sacks on it. They make all those bales off every year to feed their cattle a few miles west of the headquarters. But how can one express ownership to the public in a circumstance like that? For 55 years, they used it for what it's best used for. Its highest and best use for the Ritz's is production of prairie hay for their calves. That's what they use it for, and that's their claim of ownership.
Counsel, some of the cases talk about claiming ownership by paying the taxes.
Yeah, and I noticed that Judge Hurdle was one of the judges that decided Roland Whitney against Sid Doak and Ed Doak. And that case, I know it's not a Supreme Court case, it's a Court of Appeals case, but that's a 2011 case in which you have rounded up all the law on this subject and you have reduced it to writing in this Whitney v. Doak and Ed Doak. And they directly address that tax question. And it is well established. Neither does the failure to pay real estate on the disputed land destroy the adversity and hostility of Arthur's possession.
Did you leave out the word taxes?
I'm sorry if I did leave out the word taxes. Neither does the failure to pay real estate taxes on the disputed land destroy the adversity and hostility of Arthur's possession. Whitney relies upon Bush v. Griffin, a 1906 case, to argue that Arthur did not have the intent to adversely possess the disputed land because he did not pay the property taxes. Bush versus Griffin tells that the fact that an individual claiming adverse possession has not paid taxes is of weight as tending to show that he did not intend to claim title as against the rightful owner. But the court also stated that the fact that an individual claiming adverse possession paid no taxes of itself will not defeat his claim of title by adverse possession. Indeed, since Bush v. Griffin, since Bush v. Griffin, the Nebraska Supreme Court has found adverse possession in numerous instances where the record owners have paid real estate taxes throughout the period of adverse possession. Therefore, where the facts of the case tend toward the finding of adverse possession, the failure of the person claiming title by adverse possession to pay taxes, and even the payment of taxes by the record owner, will not preclude the court from finding that possession has been hostile. Okay, here's what I have to say to you, judges. How could the Ritzes pay taxes when they didn't know that they were possessing more than the caller had been? They didn't know that they had an extra acre. If they had, they could have paid taxes, but they didn't know.
And they also didn't know that they owned that property when it was sold to the various owners.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Prior to the current owner.
I have to keep counting on that premise. How could they go to the real estate broker and say, hey, don't be selling my strip? They didn't know that they were in possession of a strip in the next meeting. They knew that they had what they called an A. They believed that they had an 80-acre tract and that the barbed wire fence denoted the north boundary. It had been that way since 1960, at least, and we believed before. The people that installed the fence are gone. But the Supreme Court has ruled in the past that the fact that people didn't know they were possessing more than the call of their deed does not preclude them from an adverse possession.
If the fence was over on your client's property, would your argument be the same? Would your argument be the same?
Well, if it was over on my side of the question,
so they're losing. So they're losing.
I would have to admit that we're subject to the laws of the state of Alaska. You have to remember what this rule is about. Thus, nationwide, there's an adverse possession rule. And the reason is the powers that be never wanted to reward a landowner for sitting on his hands and not taking care of his property. In order to promote the progress of this nation, they have promoted people to use property, make something of it. And if a landowner allows his land to go to waste, so to speak, and another person takes over and finds it and pays it, then after 10 years, that landowner simply loses his rights. That's the whole concept. And it's a well-established concept. Nothing new.
I think you're out of time.
Thank you.
Does the appellant have any time left? Very well. Thank you very much for coming in this afternoon. The matter is deemed submitted, and you are both excused.